This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody!
You're listening to a special presentation from the Kings of Sport. It's the Ringside Rap, State of the WWE Edition, with your host, Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa, the Godfather Nate Milton, and Marcus Vandenberg. The Kings of Sport is powered by Place to Be Nation at placetobenation.com.
Yes, we are here. It is the Kings of Sport. We have a very special edition of the show tonight. It's a bonus edition, if you will, an extended edition of the Ringside Rap. There's been so many events happening in the world of professional wrestling over the past 48 hours, and, you know, we got to give you what you want, got to give you what you need. I am the Godfather Nate Milton, joined as always by my partners in crime, Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa and Marcus Vandenberg. And much like John Cena, Marcus is in here playing her tonight, so big up to Marcus for that. But fellas, there's been a lot of excitement. You know, we've got a lot of topics tonight. The Elimination Chamber, the launch of the WWE Network, Raw from the night, which all three of us just watched, and the road to WrestleMania. So, you know, we don't even have any time to waste. So, Big Nasty, last night, Elimination Chamber, we have our WrestleMania main event, possibly.
Or do maybe. We?
Or do we? yeah, so, and I can't wait to talk about the fallout on Raw, but let's start with last night at the Elimination Chamber, and Big Nasty, do the honors and take us through the card.
Well, let's start with the pre-show, Brother Nate, where we got Ryback in the Rhodes Dynasty. A pretty cool moment to where Curtis Axel and Ryback come out with Larry the Axe Hennig. Curtis Axel's grandfather. Remember, we're in Minnesota tonight, so WWE kind of cleverly playing to the crowd. Let's face it, Curtis Axel's only identity is the fact that he's Kurt Hennig / Mr. Perfect's son. He really doesn't have anything else going for him outside of that, so WWE exploited that in the right area. So it's Curtis Axel and Ryback against the Rhodes brothers. Curtis Axel chance to begin the match. There are dueling dives by the Rhodes, which is really cool. The high spot of the match to where Cody runs up the ropes and jumps out. At the same time, Goldust dives through the ropes in a suicide dive. Ryback was tagged in, dominated a little bit, kind of sloppy offense. I love the Ryback character, by the way, with his whole Twitter troll type deal. His in-ring isn't ever really going to be that good, but he is making the most out of what he's getting right now, which is not much. Goldust hit a really impressive Hurricanrana late in the match after getting a hot tag. Curtis Axel teased a perfect plex on Cody Rhodes when he became legal. Crowd popped for that, but he didn't get it. Cody Rhodes countered a neckbreaker and won with Crossroads. Pretty quick match. The Rhodes brothers won, and it looks like they're not breaking up anytime soon. What do you guys think about that? Start with Nate.
Yeah, that was my first thought of the match. You know, of course, Goldust and Cody always are a good match. You know, they're solid workers. They were my tag team of the year for 2013. So, you know, you're not going to get a bad match out of those two. Ryback and Curtis Axel, you know, they're stale. They're more than day old bread. They got the mold on them. You got to scrape it. Don't feed me more of that. but yeah, you're right. The thing that stood out the most from this match was, you know, I guess they're going to hold off on the split, at least for now. And I, you know, it seems to me if you were going to do that, I don't know why you took the belts off of them in the first place.
Yeah, it's very weird. you know, if they're running out of time. If they're going to do the split for Mania, then they probably should have done it either last night or tonight. So it looks like they're sticking together, and I'm not sure where exactly they go from here. It seems like the Usos are eventually going to get the titles, and then do you have two babyface teams to wear out for the titles? Or I'm just sort of confused at which direction they're going, but it was very great to see Larry the Axe Sandin. I remember the last time I've seen him on WWE TV, and I'm glad they introduced him, because I wasn't sure who that was at first, and then I was like, oh, okay, it made sense. And because he came out, I was actually expecting to go over because they're sort of playing to the crowd, but no such luck.
Yeah, and it's weird with the Rose Brothers. It looked like they were well on their way to the split because, if you'll remember, Goldust accidentally eliminated Cody Rhodes from the Royal Rumble on the same night they lost the titles. So it looked like they were going full
speed. And there was really no follow-up on that.
No, there wasn't. And I think I might know why they might be shying away from the split is because they're already doing a couple of them. If you saw Raw tonight, you saw Cesaro and Swagger are teasing a little tension. The Shield is going to split. They can't have every match booked on this card be a result of a tag team splitting. So, you know, I think two splits is more than enough for WrestleMania cards. So maybe they're just going to hold off on that to later date if they ever get to it.
They plus, just split Titus Tito.
Yeah. You can't just split everybody up. It's one trick pony. As much as I think Cody Rhodes and Goldust should be the split that gets featured on WrestleMania, I can't blame them for, you know, wanting to hold off on one or two. But we go backstage, get an Usos interview before the show. They say how the Wild Samoans, their relatives, held the tag titles 35 years ago. Rikishi did, and now they will. Two words, it's over. Not a great promo, but it was pretty good. It did its job. Then we go to what I believe looks like a champagne room with Renee Young, who's sitting in a dimly lit room with a Twitter board. It just really was really sleazy to look at. I don't know if I was the only one who noticed.
Yeah, just remember, Brother Alfred, no matter what a stripper tells you, there's no sex in the champagne room.
Exactly. None. No sex in the champagne room. Okay, then we kick off the show. We kick off with Big E against Jack Swagger, which was a match that was a throwaway match. It was announced really, really close to the pay-per-view. You wouldn't expect much out of it, but it was a much better match than expected, and the crowd was super into this match. You saw a lot of athleticism from Big E. He did a diving spear on the apron, much like the spear you saw at WrestleMania 22, where Edge speared Mick Foley out onto the table. Big E pulled one of those off on Jack Swagger, launched himself also through the stair steps on Jack Swagger. So they did a lot of crazy stuff in this match. At one point, Jack Swagger locked on the Patriot Lock, and the finish came when Big E hit an enziguri and then ended with the big ending. Again, crowd super into this match. I don't know if it's because the show was kicking off and they were excited, but they really did a good job captivating the crowd in this match, doing more with less, and Big E goes over Swagger, which is very predictable. What'd you think about the match, Marcus?
Decent first match. I like that Big E sort of didn't over now with the fans. They dropped the whole Langston thing, which is still weird to me, but yeah, it was a decent opener. I don't think any of us thought Swagger was going to win, but, you know, at the same time, it's good to actually have your champion out there to actually defend his title.
Yeah, I mean, Swagger is a cold character, but he's always solid in the ring. The thing that, you know, just kind of made me chuckle while I was watching this match is that, was it the previous year Jack Swagger won the Elimination Chamber?
Yeah. And,
like, just think about that for a second. Jack Swagger had a championship match at WrestleMania. Yeah, that happened.
I mean, look at Miz. I mean, this is just WWE in this age. It's here today, gone tomorrow. And I must note that before this match, Zeb Coulter cut kind of a wacky promo. It was kind of like he was comparing Big E subtly to Obama, saying that nothing has gotten better since he's become Intercontinental Champion. He mentioned polar ice caps in why he was Intercontinental Champion. So, I mean, I kind of knew where he was going with this, but not his best stuff. I don't think the crowd really got what
this.
He was
see,
doing.
This is the real test. I mean, it's one thing to make the foreigner jokes or the immigrant, you know, comments, but, you know, when you're talking about black folk, you know, you notice Zeb didn't go as hard as Zeb usually goes.
It's Black History Month. You can't do it. Come on. We got how many days? Four more days left, and then it's fair game.
Well, okay, and say what you want about this gimmick, because this dominated the show. Wade Barrett gets elevated to probably the heavens of the Target Center, and to do the first of many Bad News Barrett segments throughout the night. He starts with this immaculate podium saying Russia has more gold and more medals than America does, and America's going to have to wait four more years to do anything about it.
That's a good Wade Barrett.
Pretty much, yeah, I've been working on it. He trolls the crowd, and then goes away. And we get a Hulk Hogan return. A lot of different media outlets touting Hulk Hogan's return. I saw a Bleacher Report cameo, which is I didn't see a Yahoo cameo, Marcus. Was it there?
No, I didn't write on it. I was actually going to write tonight, but then we'll get to it later. But when he came out, he really didn't say much, so I was like, screw it.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully they would have spelled your name.
It was just a commercial
put you over.
I know.
Yeah, it was pretty much a commercial.
For the network.
A lot of promo on the network on this show, which they did none of it on Raw. Kind of backwards, but it is what it is. And then we go to more filler with Daniel Bryan backstage saying that whether he's 100% or 10%, he's going to go out all the time. And yes, will this match be painful? Yes. Will his opponent go after his shoulder? Yes. Will he give it his all and fight and scratch and claw to win the WWE World Heavyweight Championship? Yes, 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 yes. Finally, we get to a match, Outlaws, Usos. This is where the CM Punk chants start up. Very raucous crowd tonight in Minnesota. Not much this match. It was kind of surprising, the result. At the finish, Road Dogg gets super kicked by one of the Usos. Billy comes from behind, rolls him up, grabs the tights, and the Outlaws go over the Usos. So it looks like they might be teasing and stringing fans along until WrestleMania. Hopefully, I think, until the Usos get the title, because they've been a very good tag team and only gotten better. But New Age Outlaws, still your tag team champions of the world, Nate.
Yeah, I was not surprised at the finish of this match. You are listening to the Kings of Sport, a very special edition, bonus edition of the Ringside Wrap, the WWE, kind of the state of the union, I guess, of the WWE right now. And, of course, we're going over Elimination Chamber from last night. And, yeah, you know, I expected the Outlaws to win this match, because if you're going to have the Usos win the belts, why not just wait a month, you know, and do it at WrestleMania? They're still hot, as we saw from the Raw tonight. And, you know, the Outlaws still aren't stale yet. So, you know, it didn't surprise me at all, Marcus.
No, it didn't surprise me. I'm just curious to see which direction they go for Mania. I mean, just another regular match. I mean, it seems like they need to up the stakes some at Mania if they're going to have another match for the titles.
Yeah, I mean, I see why, and I think it'll make the tag team titles look even better if it happens at WrestleMania. So, you know, I have no problem with this. I was just a little surprised given how the progression led. And that the New Age Outlaws are really still around. I thought this was more of a short-term thing, but they've really been pretty much a regular part of the roster, which kind of surprised
me. And to
but
me,
it's a feel-good story.
It just makes more sense, you know, because the Usos as champions going into WrestleMania is not nearly as hot as the Usos chasing. So, you know, it just makes more sense to hold off for, you know, 6 weeks.
And as exactly. We saw tonight, they are still the baby faces.
Oh, you didn't know?
Well, here comes Wade Barrett once again. Now, his podium is having technical difficulties, which he does mention. In stride, he handles this perfectly like a pro. And he says the Yes Movement will cease to exist. And he chants yes, 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 sarcastically, to which the crowd responds no, no, no. So Wade Barrett with this gimmick, just really a human troll and getting reaction out of the audience. If anybody is to pull off a gimmick where you're just talking and antagonizing people, I think Wade Barrett's the right guy for the job, so he's still out there. We then get a WWE Network demonstration where Michael Cole, Jerry Lawler, JBL show you how the network will work. Again, a lot of hype for the WWE Network on this pay-per-view, which I think was a little bit misplaced because you could have done it for free on TV, but maybe they didn't want to bury the chamber. We go into Titus Young, Titus O'Neil versus Darren Young. This match really was very cold going in. It was more of a SmackDown feud, so it didn't really get a lot of spotlight on Raw. Crowd didn't really care about it. We got a We Want Lesnar chant. Darren Young dominated early. Titus came back and just started tossing him around. Darren Young had a brief comeback, ran into the clash of the Titus, and Titus O'Neil won. No surprise there. We go, any thoughts, guys? I mean,
no.
I mean, yeah, just it was a historic night for the LGBT community, because you had Jason Collins suit up for the Nets, and then you had D. Young do the job to Titus O'Neil. So, congratulations.
Yeah, it was a rough weekend for the LGBT community.
Really,
Jason Collins,
really
0 points, five fouls. Michael Sam, very slow, very weak. Darren Young had a job. So what does that tell you?
Here they come. Remember, Marcus, it's all about the chase. Okay, they lose, and then they just come back and come back. That's a babyface journey. It's a hero's journey. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think D. Young is basically just going to turn into the next JTG, basically.
David Otunda. He made a great spokesperson for different functions and rallies and you know,
the Miz on the Be a Star circuit.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. When he first came out, and I commend the WWE for just staying the course and going along and not making too big of a deal about the fact that Darren Young's gay. I mean, didn't make any big deal, you know? And it's very mature of them. But really, I thought WWE being the way they are, we're going to exploit this, and they could have made a lot of money out of this angle for better or for worse. And again, I'm kind of proud of that they didn't really go.
Yeah, I think there is a line, though, between exploitation and showcasing. And I think that, you know, I'm glad that they didn't do the usual WWE thing, but I also think that, you know, they kind of missed an opportunity with the guy.
They did, yeah, because, again, they could have showcased him too, but I don't really trust WWE to be sure about showcasing.
There's too many skeletons in their past from the 90s with accusations about...
Bark like a dog!
Well, no, not even that, but I didn't
You're
mean
You're talking
like,
about Uncle Pat?
Uncle Pat and soliciting wrestlers, allegedly, on the road, and so there's just too many skeletons that if someone would open that door if they decided to go that route, so... Good on them for not taking the low road. No pun intended.
More Wade Barrett. Oh, God. Wade Barrett goes after Hulk Hogan. Said Hulk Hogan's once red-hot spotlight will be dimmed compared to the extraordinary charisma of White Pat. And then he goes back down. Again, at this point, the podium is completely shot. It was so high into the sky at first, and now it is completely ghettoized. But Wade Barrett makes the best of it. And now we get Wyatt versus The Shield. Let me tell you about this match. Great video package that tells a story of dissension within The Shield and the fact that they now have to go against another dominant group. The crowd was chanting, "This is awesome," as they stood in the ring, which I've really never seen before.
Yeah.
They hadn't even done anything yet. And then we get, "Let's go Wyatt, let's go Shield." So crowd very, very hot for this match. And this was one of the few matches, if you saw on TV, that a lot of people were excited about. They did a lot of teaser segments, very old school segments where they looked like they're about to fight, and then they backed off and only got the crowd more fired up about seeing this. We started with Rollins, and Rollins was really, really, really good in this match. He had a lot of great stuff that he did. At one point, he came off the top rope for kind of like a superplex, and he landed on his feet. Rollins was worked over a lot, and Harper had a suicide dive at one point, followed by Rollins with a swanton to the outside, which is really cool to watch. Rollins and Reigns went back and forth and spilled into the crowd. The action went out to the outside as Dean Ambrose went in the crowd with Bray Wyatt. All the while, Rowan and Harper chokeslammed Rollins through the table, which drew holy shit chants. Dean Ambrose still nowhere to be found. This led to the Wyatts surrounding Roman Reigns, who staged a valiant comeback. He had a Superman punch on Rowan and Bray. He had a spear on Harper. The Wyatts ran down way as... Bray Wyatt hit an elbow on Reigns, knocked him out, and hit the Sister Abigail for the victory as the Wyatts went over the Shield. Any surprise there, Nate?
No, not at all. You know, and I will say that, you know, we'll get to my review of the show as a whole a little bit later on, but, you know, spoiler alert, I thought this was a two-match show going into the night, and this is one of the matches I was definitely looking forward to. You got two teams that have been pretty well protected their entire run, and, you know, two guys in terms of Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns that are going to be future stars for this company. And there's also, you know, I'm a big fan of Seth Rollins. I think in ring, he may be the best out of all of them. And you had Rowan and Harper, who are usually garbage. They looked pretty solid. They looked pretty damn good in this match, you know, for Rowan and Harper. And it told the story, which is probably the most important thing. You know, you had Rollins being taken out of the picture. You had Ambrose kind of off doing his thing. And then you had Roman Reigns. You gave him his big, you know, King Leonidas moment. And then, you know, the right team went over, you know. And so I think all in all, it was a well-booked match. Everybody did their part. And, you know, I see nothing but good things in the future for Bray and Roman Reigns if the bookers don't screw it up.
Big if. Marcus?
Yeah, this was a great match. My only complaint is that they did it in February, not at WrestleMania. I would love to see another round of this match, maybe sort of a War Games style. If you want to, you know, if you're so busy introducing or pimping your network, you can say, hey, this is what War Games was in WCW and sort of work
they
that in.
Like, they could have put those guys in a chamber match. Guys. Like,
yeah,
that been
they
cool.
Could have.
That could have worked.
Yeah.
You've never seen a team elimination chamber match, and that would be a good time to do it with only one title. They could have just made a singles title match and done that with the chamber.
Yeah, so my hope is if Cena is actually legit hurt and he can't wrestle, then maybe that's something they look into is going back to the well one more time and doing a rematch with the two teams at Mania.
Yeah, I thought it was a great match. I thought it told a lot of stories. The finish was perfect because you had Roman Reigns in the ring alone with Dean Ambrose nowhere to be found. So now he can continue to tease that tension and say, where were you when I needed you? And on Twitter, I got a lot of match of the year tweets. People, we need to cooler on the match of the year stuff.
Smart.
Stop. We're in February, okay? There's going to be one match that's match of the year. It's going to be the best match at WrestleMania. That's how it is 99% of the time.
Batista,
I don't want to hear about match of the year. Yeah, of course. Who else would be the match of the year?
Batista.
I don't want to hear match of the year in February. So a good match, but let's just leave it at that. Match of the night, all right? We'll give you that. Silver medal. We go to Hogan and Cena in a WWE Network promo, and Christian then gets a backstage interview with Renee Young. Christian is now teetering in the waters of heel. He says he dares you to underestimate him. And then I have in my notes, AJ beats Cameron. Terrible match. It was horrible.
Weren't
it
you expecting awful. More after the way AJ hyped it up? And then
I thought she was going to drop the title.
To Cameron?
I thought the way she was doing it. No, not to, when I saw Cameron come out, then I was like, okay. She's
oh, okay. Yeah, I was expecting
when
a surprise.
She was talking about how, oh, I can beat everybody. Yeah, I thought she was, you know, and you got the CM Punk situation. I thought she was going
to
drop the title.
The only thing I took from that match was, I think because of the injury to Naomi, they're going to go ahead and hotshot the deal with Tamina.
They could, because at the end of the match, Tamina, you know, came in and kind of messed up the finish to where I guess Cameron won by disqualification, and AJ kind of looked at her and gave her like, what are you doing, that kind of look. And so there's a little tension there. Maybe they'll do that match at WrestleMania, because Tamina hasn't really gotten a wrestling role. She's been more of a bodyguard for this whole thing. No thoughts?
She's no. She's still Diesel to me. She's the female Diesel.
Yeah,
Bit Mommy Cool. We'll get her shot eventually.
She's the rich man's Lady Topper.
Yeah,
exactly. You guys want more Wade Barrett? You got it. He rises up and he says, adults, because of the WWE Network, adults will lose their jobs and their kids will be expelled for lack of attendance. Places will start to stink. Rats will move in and it'll look like more of a pigsty than it already does. The government will come down and shut down and condemn the home. People will fend for themselves on the streets because they're so addicted to the WWE Network. And JBL came in with a funny inside joke, said, what's wrong with rats moving in? Another term for wrestler
yes.
group. Very well done, JBL.
Two quick things on that Bad News Barrett promo. First of all, I thought he did a great job all night. It's probably the most entertaining he's been. Like you said, he was quick on his feet and handled all the technical issues. But as we saw on Raw, you know, there was no follow-up.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't see how far this thing is going to go, at least, you know, in the eyes of those backstage. But the other thing was, in that last promo where he was talking about, you know, because of the WWE Network, you're going to not go to work. And because you don't go to work, your house is going to get dirty. And because your house gets dirty, you're going to have rats. It seemed to me almost, and maybe I was reading too much into it, like a dig at one of those DirecTV commercials.
Oh, yeah. Like
yeah, yeah.
Those, when you lose your job,
exactly.
You're unemployed. When you're unemployed, you're on welfare.
And you know, you know, the kind of the beef between the WWE and Dish Network and DirecTV. So it seemed like a little dig at them in a
that
way.
Is,
well, I don't think they have any beef
yet
with DirecTV, though.
No, it's Dish Network.
It's just Dish.
Look, we know Vince won't stop.
It's a cold war.
It's like Puppet can't stop. Won't stop.
Take that. Then we get a toys in-show commercial where Calais, it's Emma, it's Santino's Los Matadores, and just a bunch of garbage to where Emma ends by saying she likes playing with toys. So a little more adult humor for you. Then we get into what I feel like is the match of the night. Match of the year! Batista taking on Alberto Del Rio. I reached out to the Nasty Network, to my Twitterverse.
Yeah, his name wrong, by the way.
Over under the amount of chance. What, Batista?
His name is Batista.
I didn't get his. I'll correct myself. I'll correct myself a little later on here. I asked the Nasty Network, over under the amount of chance during this match that have nothing to do with the match. Because you knew the way people were treating Batista, as hot as this old school crowd was, you knew they were going to be all over this match. So I set the line at 3.5, and most people who responded to me said the over. I got a couple unders, but about 90% over. So we'll see how they fare. The match starts, and immediately the fans are all over Batista. Chants of Boo-tista, which I think is pretty funny. So that has to do with the match, because Batista's wrestling in it. Then we get a CM Punk chant, so that's one. Then we get a Daniel Bryan chant, that's two. Then we get a Y2J chant, that's three. They chant C, because, you know, they're being trolls, and they're getting in the corner of Alberto Del Rio. They're cheering for his offense. Then we get an RVD chant, that's yes. four, the over cash. And we get a We Want Lesnar chant, so... Fans pop for Del Rio's offense. I should note Del Rio comes out with a cast or with a cast around his neck, and he's got a crutch. He's got a warm-up on, and he's saying Del Rio cannot fight tonight. Of course, in true heel fashion, he goes after Batista with his crutch, really gets in a lot of offense. Batista looking gassed at parts of this match, but Batista made a comeback, tried to set up for the Batista bomb the first time. Alberto Del Rio got out, and then he hit him with the Batista bomb the second time when Alberto Del Rio went for the cross armbreaker. Batista wins. Fans are not happy, and he is on his way to WrestleMania, like it or not. Nate, what do you think about that?
Oh, man, I don't even know where to start with this one. Again, you are listening to the Kings of Sports special State of the WWE podcast. Right now we're going over the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. And, yeah, this match, poor Dave, poor Big Dave. Like, the funniest thing to me was during this match, I was on Facebook and KME, Chris out in L.A., big shout-out to Chris, posted a he's a wrestling fan and a Simpsons fan, so he posted the clip from that Simpsons episode. I know you remember this one, Marcus, where Mr. Burns put out his biography, the movie, and everybody was booing him. And he was like, are you saying boo or Boo Earns?
Boo Earns.
And then the little mole guy was like, I was saying Boo Earns. And he, I guess somebody photoshopped it. He's like, I was saying Batista. Because the fans are not into this guy at all. And it's, you know, I can't put the fault on Batista because it's the way he's been positioned. You know, we've all said it. Anybody that knows or watches or is a fan of wrestling has said from day one, this guy should be a heel. And to try to force him down the fans' throats as this babyface, this type of reaction you're going to get. And, you know, the match wasn't anything special. Batista, you know, at points it looked like he was tired, which is not a good sign if you want this guy to headline at WrestleMania. You know, what was the match, like 7 minutes, Albert?
Yeah,
around 7 minutes.
And if, you know, the WrestleMania main event typically goes at least, you know, 14 to 15 minutes.
At least.
Probably right. Close to the 20.
It's that.
So, you know, this little 7 minute stuff ain't going to cut it. So, this looks to be the way they're going, but I have no faith, man. This could be one of the worst received WrestleMania main events, you know, of all time.
First off, mission accomplished. Try out because you turned Batista tonight. So pat yourself on the back, Mark. Second of all,
this is why we can't have nice things, internet.
Seriously.
Well, I mean, he screwed him. I mean, week one, when you're flicking off the fans your first week back, you're sort of setting yourself up to be a heel, like no matter what happens, you know. So I don't feel bad for him. I do feel bad for the creative team that now has to make chicken salad out of chicken shit with this main event. And I think it's going to force them to either call an audible and insert Bryan in that match, or at least similar to what they did with Lesnar and Goldberg, have some sort of special referee in there, maybe an Austin, someone of that type, who can at least generate some kind of positive reaction from the crowd. I mean, otherwise, I think we saw tonight on Raw that the fans are probably willing to side with Orton at this point more than Batista.
Yeah, and you know what? If the fans want to poop all over this match at WrestleMania, the joke is on them. I don't think there's any pressure for WWE to change anything. WrestleMania was sold out before one match was even announced. You want to protest? Don't buy a ticket. WWE already has your money, and it's these very people who are protesting, who are angry, who want Daniel Bryan in the main event, who are going to show up to the building. Is that how you're going to protest? You're going to line the WWE's pocket with cash and then show up to the building and buy Daniel Bryan's WWE merchandise and then protest? Yeah, that'll show them. No, it won't. So these fans who are outraged, listen, we're going to get a WrestleMania match between Randy Orton and Batista. Is it something that's optimal? No, but the fans are not showing that they don't like this as much as they should because they're buying into this merchandise and they're buying into the show. WWE is here to sell tickets. They're here to sell pay-per-views. They're not here to manage your feelings. So if you don't like it, you didn't buy an ownership stake in the booking company. You bought a seat to WrestleMania. Sit down and either shut up or chant and, you know, ruin the experience. Either or, it doesn't matter because Bryan is not going to be in the WrestleMania main event. I can guarantee you that. It's going to be Bryan and Triple H like it's been for months now.
Well, not even, did you hear Dan LeVanstreet's theory proposal?
Yeah, I mean, and that would be a nice little swerve to have, you know, Daniel Bryan go through Triple H and then he gets another match at WrestleMania in true Bret Hart fashion to where he'd work two WrestleManias, he'd bookend the WrestleManias in a sense. And you know what? For the fans, that'd be great and whatnot, but WWE does not owe anybody anything. And I really don't think WWE should feel any pressure to give fans what they want just because they're, I mean, fans, there's one way to show WWE that you really don't want something and for them to react to it, and that's to hit them in the wallet. And if fans are going to pay to see WrestleMania and then protest, why should the WWE feel any incentive to give them what they want?
And even if they put them in that match and make it a three-way, I still think, like, what would be worse, for him not to be in the main event or for him to be in the main event and still lose to Batista?
No, I think he would win. What was the point of putting him in the match? If
to screw with
win.
The fans.
No.
Wow.
I think you're risking my life and Alfred's life if he goes to WrestleMania if you do that. that'd be the ultimate fuck you is to have Bryan in a match. And, yeah, no, don't do that. I want to get home safely.
Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves, fellas. We don't even know whether or not Bryan went over in the chamber yet. So let's get to that.
Spoiler.
We go to the Elimination Chamber.
It's kayfabe, brother.
Where anything can happen. We start off with Sheamus and Cesaro, who brawl, and I mean, just Cesaro is a very good brawler, and as is Sheamus, so this kind of worked, but it was very, very stiff, where they're just going at it, and for the first few minutes, you know, you're getting the dueling kicks, you're getting, you know, brawling. Finally, Bryan goes in. Wait a minute. Okay, yes, Bryan goes in, and he hits a really cool maneuver to where he's got kind of like an STF maneuver on Sheamus, and here comes Cesaro, and he hits a Northern Light suplex on Cesaro at the same time he's got an STF-like submission on Sheamus, and so he gets a count, and they kick out, but it was a really cool visual. Bryan went through the pod. He was thrown through the pod to underscore a shoulder injury he had. His shoulder was heavily taped, and it was worked over the entire match. Christian got buzzed in next. He immediately goes after Bryan's shoulder, which Christian is becoming more and more of a heel every single week. And this only accentuated that to where Daniel Bryan is being beaten up by Christian, who is desperate. And that's the story for Christian, is that's the story going into this match, is he really has no chance, but he's saying how desperate he is. Christian hit Sheamus with an inverted DDT on the steel. That's our first steel spot of the night. And then Cesaro threw Christian in the air at one point, and he does that kind of thing where he throws him in the air and he goes for the upcut. But instead of coming down, Christian catches a cage, and a really cool visual. Then Christian dropped, and Cesaro powerbombed him onto the pod. Cena comes up next, and he hits the AA on Christian into the ring on Cesaro. Bryan peppers Cena with kicks. Christian then hit the kill switch for the near fall on Daniel Bryan. Cena interrupted the Cesaro swing, got a lot of boos, and turned it into a catapult, which was a pretty cool spot. Cena and Bryan and Cesaro all exchanged kicks one after the other. Cena's looking a little uglier than the other two, but it was the kind of boo, yeah, exchange, but a three-way. Then we get Orton next into the chamber, which is really cool because he stopped. Everybody kind of starts chanting boring, and then everybody surrounds him, everybody in the pod, and Orton quickly retreats back into his pod. So he's sitting there cornered, doesn't come back out. Everybody's chanting pussy at Randy Orton, and Sheamus, who he's taunting, hits the bro kick on the pod and it breaks a plexiglass. That leads to a Cesaro swing on Randy Orton. Goes 30 revolutions of a Cesaro swing. They really put him over in this match. Christian got out of the Celtic Cross at one point, climbed to the top of the pod. Sheamus chased him. Orton hit a superplex on Sheamus, and Christian hit a crazy bump A splash on Sheamus from the top of the pod, and Sheamus is the first person eliminated. At this point, we get a This Is Awesome chant. Daniel Bryan eliminates Christian with a running knee. Final Four is standing around looking at each other, and they're trying to get a crowd reaction. But, you know, the Final Four at the Royal Rumble is one thing because you've gone through 26 guys. But the Final Four in a match with six people, if you're really trying to build that up like it's a big moment, fans aren't going to react to that. So, they kind of brawl, and then that leaves Bryan and Cena to face up. And that's when people start chanting. They're all on Bryan's side, chanting yes. Cena teases the attitude adjustment. Cesaro hit a back suplex while Cena had Bryan in the air, which was also a show of strength for Cesaro, who looked very strong in this match. AA on Steel, Cesaro followed by an STF on Cesaro. And while Cena has the STF on Cesaro, the lights go out, and Bray Wyatt's music hits. And I turn to my brother at this point, and I say, how stupid would it be if they just showed up in the chamber? Like, how emasculating to the chamber would it be if the Wyatts just... the lights come on, and the Wyatts show up.
How do they do
that? On cue, the lights come on, and the Wyatts are inside the chamber, which is supposed to be Satan's structure, keeping all comers outside. Nope, Wyatts just get right back inside. They gang up on Cena, hit Sister Abigail, and Cena is out of the match after Orton nabs the pin. Thank you, Wyatt chants start to develop. And at this point, Kane comes down to kick the Wyatts out of the chamber. And I think everybody knows where this match is going now, because now you have Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton and facing off in the ring. And Kane is just sitting out there on the side. Daniel Bryan immediately goes after Kane with a running knee, a knee from the top of the rope. And as him and Randy Orton are brawling, Bryan hit a running knee after counting an RKO. Kane stopped the three count. Bryan kicked Kane. Orton hit the RKO, got a near fall. And as Bryan got up, Kane blasted him with an elbow. And Orton hit another RKO for the win. Randy Orton wins the Elimination Chamber. As expected, we are getting Randy Orton versus Batista at WrestleMania.
Yes.
And this show ended, very telling how this show ended, with fans, shots of fans looking just disgruntled and angry, and oh, Daniel Bryan didn't win. And this sent a message. This was a message from Vince McMahon. A lot of fans have been pressuring WWE to change their mind that this isn't the right main event. They're trying to book the product. This is Vince McMahon saying, this is my product. You are in the audience, and if you're going to be outraged, you're going to become part of my story. You're not going to change the event. I'm going to decide when that happens, and you are on my stage. So those pictures of those fans just tells you that Daniel Bryan's strife is going to continue to be a story, which I think Daniel Bryan is so much better as an underdog than if and when he becomes a WWE champion and everybody invariably turns on him, just like they did Cena, just like they did Rock, just like they do everybody who becomes a little too popular and gets their journey completed. So what did you guys think of the overall show, starting with Marcus?
Overall, it was okay. Two good matches, and the rest of the card was pretty whatever. I was just curious to see what they did with the Chamber and with the Shield Wyatt. So, you know, the last traditional pay-per-view, if you want to call it that. So it went out with it's not worth the $50, but it's worth my $10 a month, that's for sure.
Yeah, I thought it was, like I said earlier, it was a two-match show. I'm always a fan of Chamber matches. They usually don't disappoint. I mean, the show was just predictable. I was doing some picks beforehand and, you know, not even really paying attention. I'm like, okay, I'll pick this. I went 7-0, you know, with my picks. Yeah.
So you're the Redditor.
Yes, I'm the Black Dolphin.
Dolphins in the house.
The Black Dolphin.
You're Hootie, then.
Oh, man. But yeah, so, nothing groundbreaking. I think there were some guys that were kind of made to a certain extent at the Elimination Chamber. The Wyatts, particularly Bray, also Roman Reigns with Shield. Cesaro continues, you know, to just blossom, you know, and you know, for those of us that watched him in ROH, you know, we knew what this guy could do, and now it's cool to see him getting that platform. I really enjoyed the stuff early on in the match, in the Elimination Chamber match with him and Sheamus. It kind of reminded me of those old matches on WCW with Fit Finlay and William Regal.
Yeah,
just the kind of European strong style, so that was cool. Cena and the Wyatts, I'm glad they're continuing that. I think it's an intriguing feud. I didn't like, though, you know, again, the whole deal with the lights off and then they show up. Like, you know, how many times are we gonna use this particular gimmick, this particular technique? But that being said, it was okay. And Orton winning was the right call. If Bryan was going to win the title, you don't want him to win the title at Elimination Chamber. I mean, that's anticlimactic in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I kind of thought that this crowd, this pay-per-view was elevated by the crowd. I didn't think it was a particularly good pay-per-view. I thought it delivered where we expected it to. And it was made a little better by how involved the crowd was, which is always good, for better or for worse. Even when they completely crap all over a match, I think it creates for a very unique atmosphere, to where at least if the match isn't going to be as good, it makes for a fun environment. So, I mean, I thought it was better than it should have been. And I wouldn't necessarily say it was a good show, but I just thought it was a little better. Yeah, it'll be interesting where they go here from WrestleMania, but it looks like they're going to stay the course. A couple months ago, the match lineup was leaked, and the top five matches we heard of looks like they're going exactly with that course. I don't see any changes or deviations in that path.
The Borton and Bautista. Get ready.
It's going to be a spectacle.
Yeah. I mean, and the WWE, just in terms of talking about the crowd, I know there's like a lot of kind of debate, I guess, you know, in terms of, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? It's something that it just is, you know, and it's something that the WWE can't complain about because they've encouraged it. You know, they've been complicit with it. You know, didn't they at the Slammies, didn't they give the award for best crowd to that crowd after Mania?
New Jersey.
Yeah. You know, when you acknowledge the fans like that, you know, you're just throwing raw meat to a dog, and you know, this is what you're going to get. So for the performers or anybody in the back that's like upset, or, you know, this isn't how a crowd should react, you know, you created this monster, and it's not, you know, this genie ain't going back in the bottle anytime soon.
Well, I think the crowd should help elevate your game. They're not doing these chants during Daniel Bryan matches or Cesaro matches. They're doing these chants during matches that they find boring and a waste of their time. So if I'm a wrestler, and I'm hearing these chants, then I need to look at myself in the mirror and say, okay, what am I doing wrong as a character? Because clearly the fans have no interest in my character. So, you know, I don't, there's nothing they can do about it. I'm sure there are some wrestlers who probably take it to heart more than others, but at the same time, it's better than no reaction.
Right, and WWE is the ultimate spectator sport, and I think part of the allure of WrestleMania, as much as people complain about seeing Orton and Batista, it's like, yeah, but then you get to go in there and go crazy. Like, this is going to, one of the drawing points, I think, to this match is that, man, how apeshit are these fans going to go when they see these guys in the ring? Like, even though they don't want that match, it's getting to such a point, it's building to such a crescendo that they're just going to go absolutely wild, and it's going to be a spectacle, and that's all WrestleMania is asked to be.
Yeah, and so, you know, in terms of, just really quick, going around rating scale 1 to 10 Elimination Chamber, I give it, I really like those two matches, the sixth man and the Elimination Chamber. Everything else was kind of forgettable. Bad News Barrett was entertaining, but like we mentioned, there was no follow-up on Monday night, so what did he really mean? I'll give it a 4 out of 10. What do you think, Marcus?
Okay, Bret Hart.
Since I gave the Rumble a 6 out of 10, I thought it was a tad below the Rumble, so a 5 out of 10.
Yeah, I'll go with 6 out of 10. I think the fact that it had so much filler and commercialism on it for a pay-per-view, for something you paid for, I think really docked it. So as a pay-per-view, I'll give it a 6 out of 10 because still a crowd involvement and just how good the best match was really elevated the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I almost wrote a letter to Nefarious Means complaining about the pay-per-view, but discretion was the better part of valor on that one. But speaking of pay-per-views and the way that we as wrestling fans consume our sports entertainment these days, that brings us to our next topic. Of course, you're listening to the Kings of Sport, a special State of the WWE edition of the Ringside Wrap. Marcus, Nasty, and Nate here chatting it up with you. And the big news, and it's been big news for at least the last part of 2013, the early part of 2014, and that is the WWE Network, which went online today. And, you know, after much sound and fury, was there substance? I have not had a chance to partake in the network yet, but the other two kings did. So, Marcus, I'll let you start things off and just kind of, first of all, just kind of talk about some of the programs. There was a press release last week in terms of some of the shows that are going to be offered. And then just kind of your initial experience with the WWE.
Yeah, I'll start with the experience. So I think Nate mentioned earlier that I'm sort of under the weather. So I was actually up this morning around 5:30 or so Pacific time. So I was able to sign up for the network with no problems. Took 2 seconds. And I got in right away. And at 6 a.m., their live programming started. And it was a sneak peek at their WrestleMania Rewind show, which focused on WrestleMania 1 with the tag team match between Hogan, Piper, Mr. T.
By the way, was that Pat Summerall narrating?
Yeah, that tripped me out for me. I was like, when did they film this? Because it was Summerall doing the narration. Now this has to be really old. Or they have a good deal with the man upstairs.
So Vince did beat him in that match.
Who, Summerall?
Oh, God.
Oh, God, yeah.
you owe me,
Vince,
Lord.
I went over.
So, I guess that's part of the stipulation is that he can tap into heaven.
Summerall.
Yeah.
You can book God. You can book anybody.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was cool to watch.
How was the sign-up, like the initial sign-up? Was that a complicated process? Was there any lags or anything like that?
No, it was I already had an account for the actual website, so you entered your email and password, and then just your basic billing address. I know there's people complaining that they said even though it was a free trial, they billed your card anyways, the $9.99. I'm not sure if that's just like a hold, like when you check in at a hotel and then it'll be taken off or what, but I was charged my $10, and that was it. It took literally 2 minutes to do. But I mean, as I found out later on in the day, I was one of the lucky ones because there were some issues with the server most of the day in terms of signing up. But yeah, that was the first show. And then they did one of the countdown shows on the top 10 coolest catchphrases. Daniel Bryan's yes was number 2 somehow. But the fans voted it, so it doesn't surprise me.
Who hosted the countdown show?
There was no host. It was sort of just a mysterious voice.
Okay.
Female voice.
But it was a cool concept. I mean, they could do these shows. There's probably 100 shows they could do based on this format. So, and then there was the NXT special hosted by Renee Young, where it was pretty much NXT for dummies, for people who haven't seen the product yet, and just sort of introduced people to some of the wrestlers. And they showed the Sami Zayn match with Cesaro. Which, interesting enough, I think they redubbed to take out Antonio. This match happened in 2013 when he was still Antonio Cesaro, but all during the match, they made no reference to his first name. So,
what a move by Cesaro!
What a waste of money and time to do that.
It's like that old Joe Montana Sports Talk football game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a nice run by Bryce.
And then after that, they showed Main Event and Superstars, and that's where I turned it off because I don't need to see that. I'm not that much of a fan.
But did you get into the archives much?
I did, and this is where I ran into some trouble. So the 3 hours this morning with the stream were perfect. I had no buffering issues, nothing at all. But going through the archives, I did run into some issues. A lot of the issues were buffering. When you first started a pay-per-view, maybe the first 5 seconds or so, it paused, it would buffer, and then it would sort of smooth out after that. But then later on in the day, there's issues with just going through the search process of trying to find shows, and it was just a mess. The good thing is they did reach a deal with Apple TV, so when I woke up this morning, there was an app on my Apple TV, which makes it a lot easier to navigate instead of going through the iPad or the computer. So that's a plus. But, you know, I think this was expected. It made sense that there were some technical issues. And part of that, I believe, is because the rest of the world got access somehow this morning. So people in Canada and India and the UK were all getting access to the network. And I don't think they were prepared for all that extra traffic. So, the WWE did email a press release during the day basically saying MLB Advanced Media was aware of the situation and they were trying their best to get everything back online. I know Alfred signed on later in the day, and you had no issue signing up, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah,
I must sign up about an hour ago.
Yeah, I would say by tomorrow this time, I doubt there'll be, or hope not, that there'll be any issues in terms of not only signing up, but also browsing. But, you know, I was trying to, there's so much content out there that I was trying to find something to watch. I was so indecisive going back and forth between what show I wanted to watch that I would start a show, you know, watch it for a couple of minutes and then switch out. So not all the pay-per-views are on there that as advertised. I'm not sure what that's about, but there are some shows that are missing. And, you know, I saw a Reddit thread earlier today that had the Chris Benoit disclaimer that was posted. They had the Owen Hart disclaimer that was posted before Over the Edge, which was kind of awkwardly worded because it was basically the whole rest in peace, Owen Hart, he was born this year, died this year. And at the very bottom, it was like, who tragically died on this pay-per-view. So it just read weird.
You accidentally died.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just weird. And then
through no fault of our own.
Yeah.
I'm not saying.
And then also the other issue that people complain about is the licensing for some of the music in WCW and ECW. And that's expected. I mean, you're not expecting them to cut deals with Metallica or these bands to get rights to these theme songs for entrances. So,
we don't get to hear Walk by Pantera when RVD comes out?
I don't believe so. And you don't even get to hear Y2J's old music in WCW. They redubbed that and put it in this WWE theme. So stuff like that is going to be weird to get used to. But overall, I would say it was a rocky launch for them, but not to the point where I think they're going to lose users. But you got to remember, wrestling fans, unpatient bunch. Look at them. I mean, we've seen with this whole Daniel Bryan thing that they no patience. They just want it now, and they don't want to wait for it. So, I would give it a week before I can actually give a full, you know, report or full review in terms of if it's going to be a success or not. But you know, I think that they have already more content than UFC Fight Pass, and I was not blown away by Fight Pass when I first signed up. It was okay. I mean, there are some shows on there, but you know, if Fight Pass wanted to really make a bang, they should have come out the gate and put all their UFC shows on there. Even though they're doing the 60-day trial, I think they needed to entice subscribers to stick with them. And I bet you the trial ends over the weekend, and I bet you March 1st they're going to have every show on there. But at that point, I think it's going to be too late for people who are trying to decide between the two.
How would you compare the ease and the user interface in terms of navigating the sites between the UFC Fight Pass and the WWE Network?
Oh, I think the network's way better. The search feature, which was pretty cool, you can search wrestler name. So if you type in Bret Hart, it'll pull up matches, and if you click on that individual match, it'll jump to that part of a specific show. So if you wanted to watch Bret Hart, Mr. Perfect from 91 SummerSlam, it'll come up and you can jump straight into that match. So that part is cool. I know there was also certain wrestlers who weren't showing up in search.
Chris Benoit. I just tried Chris Benoit and it said no results were found for that term. Please try new search.
Who are you? You don't know anybody by that name.
Yeah.
Did you mean Chris Canyon?
Oh, yes. I did like that. You know, we're going to talk about Raw in our next segment, but the way when they were showing that and they were looking up all the matches by wrestler name, you know, that's a really cool feature. And it's just sometimes the simplest implementations are the best. And you know, once I get the network, I know I'll be, you know, looking up my Sting matches and my Flair matches, or I think one weekend I'm going to have an Adam Bomb marathon. So I look forward to that.
One other thing that will come up after tonight. So they can't put up Raw and SmackDown until 30 days pass. And I think that has to do either with their current TV contract that they have with NBC Universal or Hulu Plus, or the combination of the two. Actually, I think it has to do with NBC because Hulu Plus doesn't actually put up the entire show. They have to edit their show down. So
right.
I think once they find a new home in the fall, that if they were smart, they would negotiate that in their deal, is that they can have the rights to, you know, since it's not like USA is re-airing Raw during the week, so it doesn't hurt them to put up Raw the next day on the network. So hopefully that's something they work out later this year.
Yeah, so, like I said, I'm going to get it. I'm looking forward to it. Big Nasty, I know you said you only had it for about an hour. So what were your initial thoughts?
I love it. I think it's working very well. I've really only seen the original programming. I haven't had a chance to mess around with the archives. I did see the post-Raw stuff. The post-Raw show was really well done. I think Alex Riley has a future as like an analyst in that analyst role, because he was in there with some characters like Booker T and Ric Flair, known to kind of hijack a set, known to kind of veer off course, and he handled himself perfectly.
Alex Riley, we're coming for you, nigga!
Yeah.
That's not censored, by the way.
It was it was very well done, and it's like super high def. So another thing I noticed, I saw the WrestleMania Rewind before we went on air, and so you got all these legends like Dusty Rhodes and Pat Patterson and Arn Anderson, and in this high def, which is like really, really crisp picture, they look like shit. They look awful to where they're like aging, and you got all these wrinkles, but I mean, it just speaks to how crisp the picture is. It's good to see all those guys out on TV again.
But you mentioned Alex Riley. His father was a broadcaster, so I'm sure that's something that's always been the back of his mind in terms of a plan B, is to get into broadcasting, because it sort of runs in the family.
Yeah, Josie's got to, I mean, when I saw him in FCW, I thought he was going to be a future world champion just by his look and how his charisma. And I mean, I don't know if they don't want to do anything with him wrestling wise, he definitely has the chops to be a, you know, a commentator or go that route.
Yeah.
Yeah. So both of you guys, would you give, thumbs up, thumbs down, or thumbs in the middle from your initial impressions of the WWE Network?
Oh, Marcus? I would give thumbs up. I was fortunate that I didn't have any issues signing up. So my only issues were with the buffering for the archive stuff. But, you know, I'd rather have buffering issues with the archive than buffering with the live stream, because the live stream is what's going to be showing Mania and all the pay-per-views. So I had new issues today throughout the day with the live stream, and I think that's going to be the important factor for this network to succeed.
Yeah, and again, the only buffering issue I had was with This Is NXT when I went back and saw like something that was archived. So the live stream worked fine for me, and I'll give it thumbs way up, because I'm really just excited for this day. You know, it's kind of it's been built up a lot, and I think it just delivered. I didn't have any issues, and even if I did, I think WWE should have been discouraged if they didn't have any crash issues or server issues, because it's just whenever you see something like that, like with Jay-Z and the Holy Grail, like Beyonce announcing her album by surprise, things always crash. It's going to happen. People are not meant to come in the droves and the millions and all sign on a server, no matter how advanced our technology is. So initially, that's going to happen. It's just an indication of how popular this network has, and the good job WWE did do of marketing and advertising.
Yeah, and I'm definitely looking forward to getting to experience the network. And we also want to open it up to you folks out there, listeners of the Kings of Sport podcast. We want to know what your initial impressions of the WWE Network are. You can leave feedback either on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport, or on our Twitter feed at KOSPOD, KOS_POD on Twitter. Let us know your initial thoughts, what you like, what you didn't like, your initial impressions of the WWE Network. We've also got a poll up on Facebook that you can chime in on, where we ask you, what are you most excited about in the world of professional wrestling? And the launch of the network is one of your options. TNA Lockdown, the debut of Sting, the return of Hogan, the return of Taker, or Jeff Jarrett's proposed promotion. You can go to facebook.com/thekingsofsport and vote on that poll. Let your voice be heard. Vote or die. Not really, just vote. So we'll hear your thoughts about that, and we look forward to it. But coming up next, we're going to get into Monday Night Raw, which the three of us just finished watching, and get ready to look at the road to WrestleMania. Will it be smooth sailing, or will it be a rocky road? So stick and stay. The Kings of Sport, State of the WWE Special, coming back in just a moment.
Move this man! Move!
Fight for the rights of every man. I am a
what's right. Fight for your life.
Hulk Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga.
And we are back on the Kings of Sport special State of the WWE edition of the Ringside Rap. Marcus, Nasty, and Nate holding things down. And as you can tell by that music, there was a big homecoming tonight on Raw. The red and yellow was back. The Mania was running wild. And Hulk Hogan was there to introduce us to the launch of the WWE Universe, brother. Or something like that. Hulk Hogan, of course, made his triumphant return to the Federation tonight. And, you know, we knew that he was going to be on the show, guys. And, you know, Big Nasty will take us through Raw here in a second. But just first of all, you know, Hogan, since he started the show, let's talk about that real quick. We knew he was going to be on the show, but were you as surprised as I was that he was the kickoff to the show and not save for a little bit later, starting with Marcus?
Yeah. Well, more surprised that he didn't come back. I thought he would kick off the show, and I was actually expecting some kind of interruption when he was doing his "What You Gonna Do, Brother" speech at the very end. I thought someone was gonna come interrupt him, but no interaction with any other the talent. It was pretty much a commercial for the network. So yeah, I was sort of surprised that he was leading off the show like that.
Yeah, but I mean, I wasn't really surprised because they had built it up so much that, I mean, that's, you issue a press release, you build it up all night on Elimination Chamber, so it just has to lead right into that. To keep building it up would seem like a little overkill. So, I mean, it was when the crowd was at its hottest, so we got the biggest reaction, and I thought it was well done the way they did it, especially when you look at how the show ended. It completely makes sense that they'd start with Hogan.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that flub aside, you know, it was a good return for the Hulkster. I've never been the biggest Hogan fan, but, you know, this is probably the best role as a Mania host, as an ambassador for the company, and as a spokesman, even a mascot, if you want to go that far, for the WWE network. So I think it's a good fit, Alfred.
By the way, the new name for Impact Wrestling is called Went Away for a While, because Booker T made reference to it, too, that he went away for a while from the company and came back, so... That's code for TNA.
Yeah, that's internal lingo.
Yep.
I went down south for a little bit, brother. Yeah, but I mean, it was a pretty good Raw show, a very hot Raw show, and I was glad that they were in Green Bay, Wisconsin, which was near my birthplace and one of my homes, away from home. Getting into more of the first hour stuff, another big story was Batista and. You remember how it was very hard to ignore how he was treated, but WWE does perfect in ignoring when Babyface gets a heel reaction. However, they did not do this with Batista. Batista faced off against Alberto Del Rio in a rematch of their match from last night at the Chamber. It was very similar to how they booked their match. A little back and forth action, but then Randy Orton showed up to the stage, and at the 9-minute mark, Alberto Del Rio shockingly rolled up Batista and won as Randy Orton's music was playing. He just kind of scurried out there, so they really kind of bigfooted that victory, which is a huge other one. Alberto Del Rio, but then Randy Orton went on to say that victory was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life, so that was rendered inconsequential. But then Randy Orton said that he has taken notice of how Batista's been treated by the fans ever since coming back. He even mentioned that he was called Bautista, and he thinks that it's funny. So now the fans are really, again, becoming part of the show, to where WWE is realizing how they're treating Batista, and they're going with it. And Batista responded, said, "I love this business!" And he drew more boos. He says that if they want to boo him, he'll boo them back. You tell him, Dave! And so Batista and Randy went on to play off their Evolution days, where he said that Orton has always been he turned into a whiny kiss ass before he thought they were friends, and he dropped the mic in a very awkward fashion. And then what's also very unique is that later on in the night, they promoted Batista appearing on SmackDown, and he was going to tell the WWE Universe what he really thinks of it. So no telling where they're going to go in this direction. It's very unique because they've got a heel in Orton who, not only is he a heel in storyline, people just legitimately don't like this guy and they're a little tired of him and he's kind of a cold character. And then you got Batista who's in that same realm, but he's booked as a babyface, yet WWE realizes that he's a heel. So I don't know what they're going to do with this angle at this point. Marcus, what do you think about that?
I thought this was great. I think they tried to put it off as long as they could, but finally they said, you know, enough is enough. We can't, you know, pretend to put this guy out there as a baby face and when the fans are chanting Bautista. I mean, come on. a double turn, maybe? I'm not sure where they go in this match. I can't see them both working a heel style. I am curious to see what they do with Flair and Triple H in terms of, are they going to try to introduce the Evolution angle again? Because they did mention, Orton did mention the Evolution days, and I do wonder if we're going to get some kind of either interview or segment featuring all four guys sort of before the main event at WrestleMania, just to put that in the back of your head in terms of the direction they might go.
Yeah, and you are listening to the Kings of Sport, state of the WWE edition of the Ringside Ramp. Just real quick, you know, going back to Cena, that's another thing that I don't think Cena gets a lot of credit for. We saw how Batista addressed the criticism tonight. And contrast that to the way that Cena always seems to, you know, address the crowd. You know, it's always at least 60-40 against Cena, you know, in most arenas he goes to. And he seems to be able to work around that, or at least, you know, acknowledge that and, you know, give him the kind of the wink and the nod, like, yeah, you're booing me, but there's some little kid out there that's cheering me and I'm fighting for him. Whereas Batista...
No one's fighting for Batista.
Yeah, you boo me, I'm gonna
murder you all!
I'm gonna boo you back in the tight jeans. And not only was he getting the Batista chant again, which is hilarious, but he was getting CM Punk chants during that segment. And you mentioned it earlier, I don't know if it was you or Brother Marcus, but you know, it almost made Randy Orton seem like the babyface in that confrontation, right, which is very hard to do. And it just shows you the level of animosity that a lot of these crowds have for Dave Batista. And, you know, a heel versus heel title match, it doesn't make sense. It's you know, either way, this match is going to tank. It's going to be reminiscent of Goldberg and Brock Lesnar, or, you know, what was that terrible Triple H match at Mania?
Jericho?
Yeah, Triple H to Jericho with the crowd wasn't too into it. And I think this could be even worse than either one of those matches. And, you know, it's almost worth the price of admission just to see how that match comes off, you know, in New Orleans.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just jumping ahead for a second, in terms of NetSuite on Raw in Chicago, do you think they try to avoid having Batista on the show at all?
No, they have to. I think they it looks like they're soldiering forward with Batista acknowledging the crowd reaction, and they know that they're going to give it to him in Chicago. So if they're going to go forward with the storyline, Chicago is the perfect destination for them to tell the story that the fans don't like Batista.
Well, not so much that. I think I'm just meant from the CM Punk angle. Because that chant has not – it goes for a few seconds and then it dies out. But I think NetSuite's the week where you're going to see the chant go on and on and on to the point where they don't have to acknowledge it maybe at some point, because it's going to be hard to ignore at some point in the show.
They might, but WWE has shown – I mean, they're going to get the chance and they're going to be ready for it, and they're just going to either have to ignore it or, like, when it comes to somebody cutting a promo. I remember one episode of Raw not too long ago, a couple weeks ago, they just told Randy to go out there and speed up his promo. And, you know, Randy usually cuts these slow delivery promos, but he went out there, and, like, it was the night – like, the week after CM Punk left where they knew they were going to get peppered with the chance, Randy Orton just went out and said, you know, I'm the WWE champion, I'm going to beat everybody's ass. And so he just kept talking over people chanting CM Punk, and it worked. So they're just going to have to do little things like that. I hear they're going to try to book Hogan on the show, which, you know, it's hit or miss. Chicago's an old school territory, and they're going to love to see a Hulk Hogan, but it's only a matter of time before they start chanting CM Punk. I say let them. Like, if they want to chant for a quitter, let them chant for CM Punk and just move on with the show.
I'm still halfway tempted to go to that show. I'm going to be in Indianapolis, which is a 3-hour drive, so.
Oh, you got to go to that show.
I don't know. If I know Punk is going to be there, then I'll do it. But if there's no confirmation ahead of time and I'm taking a risk, and that's 6 hours of driving for.
Do you think he's gonna show up?
No, I think he might show up backstage and talk to whoever he needs to talk to, but I don't think he'll be on the show.
Yeah, I think Vince, you know, I don't have any intimate knowledge. All I've heard is that Vince is making a ploy, and that's always something to consider. So if Vince makes some last-ditch desperate effort, if he wakes up on the final hour and realizes that he needs Punk on that show, you know, I could see a situation like that. I don't think there's a chance that Punk shows up on that show, though, just based on how this has gone, that he's
walked down on a WrestleMania payday.
No, not at all.
So enjoy your time off.
He really was the odd man out, even though he was going to face Triple H. Does Sheamus and Daniel Bryan, where would that have come from? Yeah, like, that's not a match people would have been interested in. It's almost fitting. It's very fitting. I think it's more fitting that Daniel Bryan gets Triple H instead of a WWE World Heavyweight Championship so that he validates himself. Because remember, when Triple H said, I don't fight guys like you, it was like if Daniel Bryan never got to fight Triple H, namely at a WrestleMania, that would have just hurt his character to the nth degree that Triple H said, I don't fight guys like you, I only fight stars. And then he was right, because then he would have been validated by not fighting Daniel Bryan.
And I never
now that he gets him at WrestleMania, he gets his comeuppance.
Right, and I never thought the CM Punk Triple H thing made sense anyway. I mean, first of all, we just saw that, what, 2 years ago?
Right.
And second of all, you know, he really just kind of stepped into Daniel Bryan's position. You know, he stepped in front of his boy, and it's like the storyline was about this guy being the underdog, this guy being beset upon by the authority, and all of a sudden this dude just slides in it without any rhyme or reason or some flimsy excuse. It never really made sense to me why they wanted to go that direction instead of Punk, instead of Bryan and Triple H. So it does make more sense now. I don't see him on TV at all, but I do think if he is going to show up at WrestleMania, this is Vince and the WWE's last best effort in terms of convincing him, and if not, I don't think we'll see him back for a while.
Yeah. We also got Cesaro going, well, he lost to Big E and by disqualification, as Big E went over by disqualification, but it's because Swagger came in and slapped on the Patriot lock out of nowhere, which really kind of chafed Cesaro, and Cesaro and Swagger now are teasing tension, and it kind of goes back to what we're talking about. WWE going with yet another split to where, you know, Swagger has been kind of, so culture has been riding Swagger as of late, getting on his case for not being as successful as Cesaro, and now Cesaro was on the verge of beating Big E, who Swagger failed to beat last night. So now it looks like that might be the WrestleMania match for Cesaro. I don't know, I think it's too much split, and I think that the Goldust angle is the one where you want to do that. But, I mean, at least they would get Cesaro over WrestleMania. Do you guys, starting with Marcus, think of a better program for Cesaro?
No, I think that's the one. You have to do it with Swagger, do it with Zeb. Swing them both if you can, somehow. And, you know, with the crowd's going to be on the side in New Orleans for that WrestleMania crowd. So, I think we're finally getting the babyface turn after all these months.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it makes sense. You know, you can have Zeb and Swagger saying this guy was never a real American to begin with. You know, his matches, Cesaro's matches are always entertaining. You know, even with the ridiculous commentary tonight, I think JBL and Cole spent 90% of the match arguing over what the E stands for.
They're terrible.
And Big E Lance.
That was pretty funny, actually. his first name.
It stands for Etor. Did you say Eeyore? No, I said Etor. That sounds close to Igor. Michael.
Call the match, Michael.
Yeah. Let's talk to the match for a second. Yeah, Michael, M-I-G-O. I love that.
But yeah, I think it just makes sense. I wish they would have gone forward with the Rhodes Brothers program for WrestleMania, because I think it could have been a hot program. But this is a good one, too. The fans are definitely behind Cesaro. They're ready for him to turn. And, you know, like I said earlier, Swagger's never going to be a hot character or even a top heel, but he's a guy that can be serviceable, and this is a perfect role for him in terms of elevating Cesaro to that next level.
Right. Another big match that we had was Roman Reigns against Bray Wyatt, which had been built up throughout the show, and Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt both agreed to leave their bandmates at home, or in the words of WWE scripting, Roman Reigns said that if Bray Wyatt leaves his family behind, he'll leave his hounds at home. I always love the alliterations from WWE. And they get into it. A nice long match. I felt like the crowd wasn't as into this match, they really kind of pushed for them to be. And it was just kind of surprising, figuring how hot this match was just a night ago with the three-way. And then you got the two biggest stars out out of that match going face to face, and the crowd, I mean, they were waiting at the beginning looking like they were waiting for another "This is awesome" chant, and the crowd could care less.
Yeah, they were trying to do like they were trying to do the whole Hogan Rock.
Yeah,
let's look at the crowd, and then the crowd's like, "And
do something." You know, so yeah, they weren't into the match, and Bray won by disqualification as the Shield came out, and it looks like for at least this 1 week, the Shield is back on the same page because Dean Ambrose came out. JBL did note that Dean Ambrose cost Roman Reigns the match by disqualification, so that seed is still planted. But then we got into the final segment.
Real quick on that segment, I thought it was really cool. I like the way that they're delineating the motives of the Shield. You had Reigns, you know, and a great bit of facial acting when the Wyatt family came down. He just had this look like, for real, man?
Yeah.
And then the next thing you see is Seth Rollins flying over the top rope, which is really cool. And then you had Ambrose in his tracksuit come out like 3 minutes later and finally, you know, reluctantly agree to help his boys. And so I like the story they're telling. I think if they play it smart, you know, they can make all three of the guys in the Shield be relevant after the split. Do you still think, Marcus, I know you had mentioned that they could do a three-way between the three members of the Shield. Do you think that they're going to go in that direction heading to WrestleMania?
I think it's going to depend on what happens to John Cena. If he can't wrestle, then I think they might need to rethink about what they do with the Wyatt family, and maybe stretch out the split between the Shield for another month and go back against the Wyatt family and do it again.
I just can't see John Cena missing the show. And what I think they might do with the Shield, since there's been so much tension between Ambrose and Reigns, is have a one-on-one match with Ambrose and Reigns with Rollins the special guest referee. I know that's kind of undercutting his wrestling ability, and he should have a wrestling role at WrestleMania, but Rollins has been the consummate peacemaker through all this, and he's just kept a neutral role. And you saw that Ambrose looked kind of suspicious in the fact that he was gone. He was suspicious by his absence, and Rollins was put through a table, so he couldn't really help it. So Rollins being in the middle, I think, would be another selling point to that match, to where you're asking whose side is Rollins on, and he would still be able to get physical should he make a choice. But
that's a good idea.
I still see a one-on-one match between the two. Final segment, we get into Brock Lesnar, who had been billed to turn and have an open contract. So he walks to the ring with Paul Heyman, who cuts a very long but very good promo, talking about how Brock Lesnar's done everything he wanted to do. He's the first man to go to the UFC and become champion and do it the WWE. He's an amateur champion, just building up Brock Lesnar as you would expect Paul Heyman to do so. Nothing new, but still very good job. Then he threatens that Brock Lesnar will not be part of the WrestleMania show if he doesn't get what he wants. Brock Lesnar is here to conquer history. Hintity, hint, hint. He wants to conquer history. And while we're supposed to believe that means Brock Lesnar becomes WWE World Heavyweight Champion, as Brock Lesnar gets ready to leave and Paul Heyman says that they are not going to be part of WrestleMania, we hear the gong and the place goes crazy. And out comes the Undertaker, looking like the Satan Undertaker from the Ministry of Darkness, because he had that chin strap going on, that chin beard with no mustache. So he looked like the Devil Undertaker. When you remember that, when he was like possessed by the devil? Yeah. That's something you can see on the WWE Network. he comes out and kind of takes his time, milks his entrance as he likes to do. And Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar signed the contract. Brock Lesnar urges Undertaker to sign the contract. Undertaker takes the pen and stabs Brock Lesnar's hand! And then he chokes Brock Lesnar to the table. It was ready for a pretty cool spot. And looks up at the WrestleMania sign, and that's the second match to be booked on WrestleMania. I'm sure fans are a lot more excited on that than they are Batista and Orton. They're chanting, holy shit, as Raw goes off the air. And, you know, nice little end to a very hot show. What did you guys think overall, Nate?
Really, really good visual. We were talking earlier, I was surprised that they gave us the entire segment, and it went pretty long. It was almost a half hour into the overrun. Right.
No, it wasn't 11:30. No,
it was 11, close to 20 minutes.
Yeah.
About 20 minutes. Yeah. It was 10 minutes longer than usual. 10 or 15 minutes longer than usual.
Oh, it was actually 11 minutes. Yeah, it seemed like longer.
Oh, really? It was only 11 minutes?
Yeah, that was
minutes?
It. The after show started like around 11:10, 11:11.
Well, it did seem like forever. You talk about Taker milking the entrance, walking to the ring, you know, the Heyman promo. Everything seemed extended. And there was not really a hook to go to the network, but I am glad that they gave the fans this on the Raw, you know, in terms of the Raw proper, the show. I love the bit where he stabbed him with the pin and then hit him with the choke slam, because this is the first time we've seen Brock vulnerable in a long time. And it makes for a good setup. Taker, you know, he's always going to be a draw for Mania, regardless of who you put him in there with. And I know Jason Agnew is upset that it's not going to be Sting, but maybe next year, Brother Agnew. But, you know, it's not, again, this is something that we've pretty much figured for months now. This was going to be the direction they'd go headed to WrestleMania. And, you know, as of right now, it's obviously the most or the more intriguing matchup of the two that are officially announced.
Did you find it weird that Taker got the upper hand like you did? Because it seems like, well, we already know he's going to win the match, so why did you need to take out Lesnar the way you did? It should have been the other way around, I thought.
Yeah, it could have been, but you've got a lot of time to build this match, and that's a good jumping off point, but now it's like you just pissed off the Beast, and they can go off of that like the Undertaker doesn't know what he's gotten himself into. And they can play off the fact that he's another year older and he's going against his toughest competition yet, and that Brock Lesnar could just really easily come back from this. I don't anticipate the Undertaker getting over on Brock Lesnar until WrestleMania, to be honest.
Yeah, and this is the first time, really, we've seen the Undertaker be aggressive on one of these comebacks. Usually, like with Triple H or with HBK, he'll just show up and not say anything, and he might not even give an answer for another week or two. But for this, you know, the deliberate antagonistic side that we saw to Taker, it was different, and I think the crowd responded to it, and you needed something like that. I think if Taker had just come out, they did a stare down, and Taker just kind of walked away or nodded or did not have anything like that, I don't know if the crowd would have left as hot. I mean, granted, Taker is always a big deal, but I think just seeing Taker stab Brock with the pin and then hit him with the chokeslam, like the crowd said, like, holy shit, business is picking up, this is going to be hot. And I think you needed that kind of moment. And I think especially tonight with the launch of the network, they wanted to, you know, go off the air with, you know, something a bit out of the norm.
Well, if you did watch the post show, you got to see Brock Lesnar lay in the ring for 10 minutes after the chokeslam. And to the point where I was like, oh, no, he's actually hurt, because there's three doctors in the ring. One of them was like holding Lesnar's wrist like he was trying to get his pulse or something. It was just a weird... I don't know what was going on, if he was just great job selling or if he like tweaked his back or what, but it was weird that they went so long with Lesnar in the ring and Heyman was just standing out there, and he eventually got in the ring with Lesnar, and 10 minutes later he actually walked to the bat by himself. So very interesting.
Yeah, Lesnar was limping, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's not supposed to be selling a leg injury.
No.
And I think the whole thing with his hand was that, you know, he got stabbed. And They had a towel over his hand. So I guess they're trying to sell that he was bleeding from the hand. But, yeah, I think it was just a sell job. And it just was really kind of weird that they were having this post show while this monster was, like, recovering. And that's the soundtrack. It just made it seem kind of inconsequential that this has just happened. But again, it's a post show, and that's something that you would expect. I'm just surprised that I'm not surprised, but I'm sad that they didn't have the Undertaker say, "You want to do it?" to Brock while they were facing off to play off of the UFC.
Yeah, that would have been a nice little Easter egg. But yeah, you know, we are firmly and fully on the road to WrestleMania. You're listening to the Kings of Sport State of the WWE special edition of the Ringside Wrap. And we got a couple more topics to before we close the show out. And the big one is the road to WrestleMania. Like you mentioned, you know, we've got Batista and Orton set for your main event, allegedly. We've got Taker and Brock. We saw the seeds planted or further grown and cultivated for Bray Wyatt and John Cena, Triple H and Daniel Bryan, as well as the Usos and the New Age Outlaws. Any of those matches really jump off the page? And do you think that those are going to be the finalized matchups? And do you see them trying to work Daniel Bryan into a bigger role as we get closer to Mania? Starting with you, Big Nasty.
Not at all. I think it's going to be Daniel Bryan, Triple H. That's why he challenged him to a WrestleMania match. I don't think they're going to really do anything too cutesy after that. They might. If the fact that they're kind of trying to
looks like they're turning Batista heel already. I don't think that they're going to anticipate Randy Orton getting babyface reaction. So you never know. But I think it's going to remain as is, and we're going to get – I think Daniel Bryan versus Triple H is just so much more of a vindication for Daniel Bryan than winning the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. It just is, based on how Triple H has been running him down and how Triple H has been the source of him not winning that title. And so, you know, he's always got, I guess, extreme rules to win the title. But I think this is a road that we're on.
I think that they will do something with Batista Orton. Whether that's not booking the match last or inserting a special referee or something. Some element has to be added, I think, to this match. Otherwise, it's going to be a hoot in terms of the fans. But the match that stands out to me so far is probably Taker Lesnar. I think that'll be an interesting match. Lesnar is not exactly a guy I would consider safe in the ring, so I'm a little worried about Taker and what he decides to do in this match, and that he can actually get through the match without getting too banged up. But I'm curious to see what kind of style both of these guys wrestle. Both of them have, we obviously know Lesnar's MMA background, and that's something Taker likes to dabble in. So I'm hoping we see a lot more grappling and more of the MMA influence in this match, and I'm looking forward to WrestleMania.
Yeah, that could be a really intriguing style matchup, you know, between Taker and Brock. The one thing I did notice, and maybe it was just me, but, you know, when Taker was posing at the end of the show, he looked a lot leaner than he has in years past.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he definitely does. And I think it's the combination of all the surgeries to where he hasn't been able to be as active, and maybe, like, rehabbing to return takes a lot more cardio, but... You know, as you get older, you lose muscle mass, and you see The Undertaker does look a little more wrinkly in the face as well.
By the way, who wants to be the person to criticize Undertaker for working one match a year? And not only that, but getting hurt after each match. How many times has this guy had surgeries after his WrestleMania matches for various injuries? I mean, you can't get through 20 minutes without getting yourself hurt? It just seems something's weird. PEDs, who knows?
Allegedly.
We'll have to send a flyer out to our PED researcher, Ronnie, out in Houston, an expert in the field of PEDs. But I would say on paper right now, but outside of Brock and Taker, maybe Triple H and Bryan is the next most intriguing matchup. Maybe Bray and Cena. Other than that, you know, I think the Usos Outlaws could be a nice little, you know, 10-minute tag match, if that. And Batista Orton, you know, that is if they decide to be stubborn and bullheaded and go ahead with their head down and plow forward, that could be one of the biggest spectacles in WrestleMania history.
But again, it'll be the most reacted to match on the card, for better or for worse. And either way, isn't it just so much more fun to crucify? I mean, for that one match, you don't want this going on the whole show. But for the fans to have their say for that one match, it's going to be fun. It'll be a spectacle. They'll see what kind of chance they can get going. They'll probably get really loud. It'll be in a dome. And you'll really get to see the experience of the WWE.
No, I mean, it'll be fun, but I just don't understand what the WWE gets out of it in terms of, I mean, this is something.
Money. That stadium is going to be packed. People have paid their tickets. Look, WWE has no pressure to rearrange that match because now they've got the network, and it's these hardcore fans who are going to be tuning into the network to watch this, and they're also going to be tuning in on pay-per-view if they're able to still do that. Now, I just think WWE has already got you where they want you, and they're in the driver's seat. They have all the power.
They do, but at the same time, they like being in control, no?
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
And this is like, I don't know. I think they're going to lose control, and I think they realize they're going to lose control if they haven't already lost it. So I would love to see, and hopefully they're going to do this with WrestleMania, with the network. I would love to see a behind-the-scenes documentary of WrestleMania Day, and especially that one match in Gorilla of what Vincent Mann
freaking out. Shut him all the hell up.
And Vince is so sick that he might actually enjoy all the booze, and he might.
I was gonna say, you know, Vince is like the ultimate troll, and if I was Vince, and knowing how petty and how sadistic he can be almost at times, the craziest thing ever, and I just had this thought, it's never gonna happen in a million years, but if I'm Vince McMahon, my dream scenario just to kind of give a big middle finger to these fans, is Batista and Orton closing the show with the special guest referee, CM Punk. You wanted Punk? You got him.
That is a true scenario. And, you know, he is a provocateur. You're absolutely right. It's why we saw those final shots where the fans, he's just kind of like, yeah, look at them. Look at the looks on their faces because their hero just lost. Like, he loves the fact that these fans are getting outraged. And, Marcus, you're talking about losing power. It's absolutely, you have got a great point. But WWE is going to, quote, unquote, lose control of these fans one way or the other. They're either going to cede power to these fans in booking a completely different match. So now the fans are seeping into what they do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the ultimate sign of them losing control. I think if they go live with the card they wanted and the fans take it over for one, a couple of matches, then again, they could just go back. Remember, that wasn't planned for the New Jersey crowd, but then they went and gave them an award as if to say, hey, you guys are into our product. We're going to reward you. So WWE can easily flip the script that way.
But you would agree that that's not the final match they even won out there. That's not how they want to end the show, correct?
Absolutely not. Okay, I don't think you want to end the show. No,
because that would be not good for 10 years down the road. Remember that show when they just shat on the fans from the match?
And it's funny, you know, it's funny that you say 10 years down the road because this will be the 10 year anniversary of 20. You know what I mean? The worst received WrestleMania match of all time, and we might have a record breaker.
That was only 20,000 fans. It's going to be what, three times the crowd? Yeah. Oh, it's going to be way worse.
Well, that's the thing, because when you get those New York stadiums and those small arenas, it's a lot louder, so the chants are going to come through more. So, I mean, the Superdome is up to the challenge. They can get as loud as anybody, so it can be a lot worse. But stadium crowds tend to, the sound doesn't come through as well. But I think they'll be up to that challenge, and it will be worse.
Yeah.
One other thing real quick that I noticed from watching Raw tonight was the way that the WWE seemed to glom on to the Yes Movement. Where they had that big commercial where, you know, everybody is supporting Daniel Bryan. Do you want to join this movement that's causing a storm all around the world? Go to WWE Shop Zone or whatever the hell they call it and get your Yes Movement t-shirts, your Yes Movement memorabilia. Do you think they run the risk of making this uncool?
No, because I think Austin never got uncool with the what chant and all the shit he was doing. I don't know if you saw the USA Today story they did on the Yes chant and Daniel Bryan last week, but it was a long story about sort of his character and how he sort of developed this whole, the Yes chant and what it stands for. And it was a good look for the company. I mean, anytime they get mainstream exposure on that level, I know they enjoy it and love it. So no, I don't think they're at that point yet that it's going to be like, you know, where the fans turn it because it's played out or anything like that.
Yeah, you know when it will become uncool is when Daniel Bryan wins the WWE World Heavyweight title.
Yes, like then what?
When the journey is complete. And WWE knows it. They know there's a lot of money to be made on this lovable loser as long as he's held down. Because that's what the Yes Movement is. It personifies this rebellion and this underdog who's getting hosed and these fans are getting behind him. So as long as he's an underdog, and these fans are all saying we need Daniel Bryan to be champion, WWE has to do this. No, they don't. WWE is being very smart in booking Daniel Bryan as the consummate underdog. My friend David Schumacher of the Grantland Network brought up a very, very brilliant analogy between Daniel Bryan and Dusty Rhodes. And he noted that Dusty Rhodes never really had a run with the World Heavyweight Championship. He was always chasing Flair, and he had the title for probably 2 months, and then he dropped the title. And that's what kept Dusty hot. That's what made him the people's champion, is that he was always on this journey. And guess who's booking that territory? It was Dusty. Dusty's one of the best wrestling minds in the business. So as long as Daniel Bryan is an underdog, he will continue to be hot with those Yes chants.
This is what we call foreplay, wrestling fans. Foreplay. I know this might be news to some of y'all, but this is what happens. You build and build and build, and finally you reach your climax. And after that, your lights out, go to bed. So do you really want to go to bed?
Yeah. Sandwich and a smoke.
Do you guys really want that yet, or do you want more foreplay? So let it build.
Yeah. Just remember, though, no matter what a stripper tells you, there's no sex in the champagne room.
None.
So that is the road to WrestleMania. We are on our way to New Orleans in the Smoothie King Center. Again, it's been a big couple of, the past 48, 72 hours. It's been a very interesting and fascinating look at the WWE, and this has been our state of the WWE. Again, you can go on Place to Be Nation and check out all the articles, all the coverage, just chronicling the network and the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view and, of course, Raw from Monday night. So check them out. But before we get out of here, we'd be remiss if we did not mention a passing of a guy who was never a top guy, but he was always kind of around, and he was always, especially in the 90s, you know, somebody that you associated with the WWE, and that is Nelson Frazier Jr., better known as Viscera or King Mabel or Big Daddy V. He passed last week of a massive heart attack 4 days after his 43rd birthday, and you know, from all accounts, anybody that had a chance to interact with him behind the scenes, you know, he was a gentleman, he was a class act, and you know, it's crazy because, you know, when you get a guy that is a top guy, you know, you get the outpouring of fan sympathy and support and memories. But when it's a guy like Viscera or a guy like Mabel, whatever you want to call him, you know, you see the impact that he had in terms of, you know, you're not going to get 50 million people saying, oh, man, RIP Mabel. But, you know, the fans that remember him and have, you know, good memories and some not so good memories, depending on the angles, you know, that's how you can tell that, you know, he wasn't just some guy that was collecting a check or just some job guy. He actually, you know, he actually did something. So
just to point out his impact, I got an instant message from my mom and said, oh, no, not Big Daddy V. So when mothers know you, yes, then that really shows what kind of impact you made in your run and the company.
Yeah, I mean, like for us, especially, you know, fans that are on the internet, you can speak to this, Alfred, dealing with the cats on your Twitter feed and commenting on your articles on Bleacher Report all the time. Sometimes we get so invested in the in-ring part of it that we forget this entertainment. And I think, you know, one of the funniest things on Raw during the late 90s or early 2000s, I guess, was when he was doing the Love Machine gimmick.
Right.
And he came out in that big smoking jacket, and he was hitting on Lillian Garcia and Trish Stratus and stuff like that. And that, it didn't mean anything in terms of in-ring. It, you know, he wasn't having five-star matches, but, you know, that was some funny stuff.
Absolutely. And it was one of those things where it's the Mark Henry effect, right? Where they give him something that's complete garbage and he's still able to come out of it and make something of it. And that's when you know somebody's at least got some modicum of talent. And the Big Daddy V, the Love Machine stuff that he did when he was Viscera, I thought it was very good and I got a very good kick out of it. And I'm just happy that this was one of the characters who was around when, before I really became smart enough to the business, before I really became jaded, because this guy was larger than life. And I just used to look at him in awe, like, good God, how is that guy able to, like, how is he not killing people? And I remember when he broke The Undertaker's face during their feud, and The Undertaker had to wear that phantom mask. And I just remember this guy, I thinking that he was, like, one of the biggest, baddest dudes, thinking, like, how is anybody ever going to beat this guy? And I'm glad that that's the kind of memories I had of Mabel slash Viscera slash Big Daddy. Well, not Big Daddy V, because he came along not too long ago, but that character was very, very larger than life to me.
You know, guy, he started in 93. I remember watching him in the USWA.
The Harlem Knights?
Yeah, the Harlem Knights. Yeah. And, you know, it was, you know, Men on a Mission, they'll never be confused with the Hart Foundation. And there was a little bit of a shucking and jiving.
A little bit.
Hey, I'm trying to speak well of the dead. Yeah. But, you know, they were fun. And for, you know, the early 90s, you know, he was there from 93 up until, what was he? He left in 07, 08?
He was off and on during the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he was off and on. But, and it had his last run with the WWECW brand. And then, you know, he was still wrestling, though, up until, you know, recently. You know, I guess his last match was in October 2013, where he beat Rene Dupree in a match in Cutter. So, you know, he was still getting work and he was still, you know, making a living. And like I said, this is never going to be a guy you're going to confuse with a Ric Flair or a Ricky Steamboat or even a Ron Simmons, but he was a special attraction in an era when special attractions were kind of, you know, other than Kali and the Big Show, there weren't really a lot of big, massive dudes, you know, in any of the companies.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And it was good that, I mean, when you talk about a special attraction, it's somebody that they could have done more with. If they would have kept him serious and they wouldn't have put him in a big purple Barney suit, you just wonder what this guy could have done, because he was a, you don't weigh like 6'5 to 600 pounds and are able to stay with the WWE and maintain that schedule without having some modicum of athletic talent. And that's exactly what he did have. So if they were able to use him a little better, and if, maybe if he didn't come along during such a dead time in WWE where characters were the focus and he was just a little more real, I think this guy could have been one of the big money drawers in WWE history.
Yeah, I mean, we know they like big dudes, and when you're 6'9 and 5 bills, I mean, that's bigger than the Big Show.
If he had come around maybe 10 years earlier, you know, when you had guys like Bundy and Big John Studd, and they were really, you know, kind of amped on big guys back then, and you take into account, like you said, he was, 6'9", 500 pounds or whatever, but he was nimble on his feet for a big dude. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you talk about that athleticism along with the look and the blonde mohawk and the contact lenses. Like, this is a guy that, you know, maybe he came along too soon, because he could have made a lot of money. I'm sure he made a good living, but he could have been, you know, one of those guys that just made a living being that special attraction, you know, back in an earlier era.
Could have been Zeus.
You know what? That would have been a little more interesting to see Hogan take him on in No Holds Barred.
Yeah. And then he would have been in Friday.
He'd have been too big for Friday, man.
Yeah,
he's still 500 pounds.
How's he going to get on that bike?
Yeah. Who's he chasing after, man? Come on.
It's both our bikes. I just keep it at Mabel's house. now I want to see the alternate version of Friday starring King Mabel as Debo.
CGI bikes.
You thought that bike was creaking before.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, not the happiest way to end the program, but I did want at least, you know, sense of recognition, because we were talking before we started recording the podcast tonight, there was no mention of it on Raw. You know, they may have made a mention on SmackDown. I didn't see it, but I thought for sure they'd at least, you know, do the thing with the, you know, the graphic and, you know, the dates before Raw went on the air, and there was nothing. And you'd think, especially with, you know, a guy that was so ingrained in the Attitude Era and, you know, was it the New Generation?
Yeah, New Generation,
the Attitude Era. Yeah, you think they would have at least, you know, done a tip of the cap and given him some props tonight.
Yeah, like on the WWE Network, you could see the late, great Nelson Frazier, a.k.a. Mabel. You could see his debut as, or whatever, as Viscera. You know, they could have just at least quickly shouted out to him, but they didn't make any mention of his name.
Yeah, it's very weird. My only thought about maybe the opening, because it was a cold open and they went straight to Hogan, so I don't know, maybe if they thought they went with the Rest in Peace and then it'd be an awkward transition to go from Rest in Peace Viscera to Hogan coming out. So, but they should have mentioned something, you know, during the show.
Yeah, you think, you know, JBL, you know, this is a guy that he spent a lot of time on the road with, a lot of time in the locker rooms. You think, you know, JBL or even Jerry Lawler, who was there when he started in Memphis, you know, would have at least given him a shout out.
Yeah.
So, but they had other pressing concerns on their mind tonight.
Money. All the money.
Yeah.
It's all about the money.
Yeah, so maybe they'll do something nice, you know, and highlight, you know, I don't know, did the website do anything for him?
Oh yeah, they had the story up the night he died. So I mean, they've done stuff on him, but nothing on TV. That I didn't watch SmackDown, so I'm not sure what they did on there, if anything.
Yeah, so again, not a good look by the WWE, You know, rest in peace to Nelson Frazier, a.k.a. King Mabel, Big Daddy V, Viscera. You know, a lot of, like I said, you know, it's black characters are always problematic, because, you know, it's a fine line between being entertaining and being a shuck and jive artist. And, it's sometimes it gets blurred. But, you know, I got no problems with Mabel. I think he was a good worker and, you know, for his size and, you know, He will be missed. So rest in peace, big man. So that is going to do it for this week. The state of the WWE is in the books. We'll continue to cover everything that's going on with the network, with the road to WrestleMania, each and every week on the Kings of Sport, which you can find on iTunes, on Stitcher. Stitcher's got a great new updated app where you can save shows for later, where you can it's a lot of great stuff. The archives, like I think you used to only be able to hear the previous 10 shows. Now you can go back to the entire archive. So you can go back to show number one and just have a marathon. And the Kings of Sport Network, you know, you can have a companion piece to the WWE Network. So that's going to do it. Before we get out of here, Brother Marcus, tell the people where they can follow you, check out your work, and, you know, send you their feedback in terms of what they think about the WWE Network.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Well, MarcoWill.
Big Nasty.
At This Is Nasty, go on Bleach Report, read the articles and watch the shows.
You can follow me on Twitter, N8, MozaiK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow all of us at CosPod, KOS_POD. Check us out at Facebook, facebook.com/Kings of Sport. And let's see, what's today's date? Is it the
24th.
Okay, so you got 4 more days, or 3, depending on when you listen to this podcast, to go to podcastland.com. Click on the Kings of Sport. Vote for the Kings of Sport for the February podcast of the month. We're going to do this, folks. Well, I have a dream that in Black History Month, the Kings of Sport will be recognized as Podcast Land's podcast of the month. So help us out. Check that out and vote for us, as well as discover some other shows, such as Mr. Throwback Thursday with our good friend Jamie. Again, hit up PlaceToBeNation.com. All the great shows, all the great articles. You can check out my TNA Impact Report. We had to give TNA at least one mention tonight.
Who?
You know, the place where you go every now and then. You know, you just go off. Actually, interesting side note real quick. Did you guys realize that they bumped up their pay-per-views, like, real quiet, like, under the rug?
No, I didn't, actually.
They added 2 more pay-per-views this year. They added Destination X, and they added Sacrifice back to the rotation.
Okay. You know what? Yeah, I had heard about Sacrifice, but not Destination.
Yeah, so yeah, real cool. As the WWE exits traditional pay-per-views, TNA's like, we got the wide open market now. Give us a call, Dish Network. We can do some business.
Well, Dish has recommended TNA and UFC for people who called in trying to order the chamber. They said, well, we don't have that, but if you're live, we got some TNA. So
yes.
This could be the opening we get.
No.
This is the rebirth of TNA.
How much are TNA pay-per-views, by the way?
Are they $29.99?
I know the one-night only is like $15, and the regular pay-per-views, I think, are like $35, somewhere in there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, they might want to look into cutting that price to $10 and doing it that
way.
Yeah,
I always thought, like, if they just priced their pay-per-views at, like, $19.95.
$10.
Hey, it's like the WWE now.
Yeah, you got match competition. If you can get pay-per-views for $10 a month from WWE, TNA, not as good quality, $10.
They give you free pay-per-views, Marcus. They give you free pay-per-views on TV.
Two Genesis. We got 2 Genesis. We got 2 versions, 2 parts of it. That's unheard of.
I get locked down for $10 too.
Yeah. You say unheard of. I say revolutionary.
Yeah.
Potato, potato.
Revolution will be on pay-per-view, not televised.
The revolution will be seen by nefarious means. Shout out to all of the WWE Network subscribers worldwide. Our friends in Canada. And I've heard some stories. So,
Like those stories are about to come to an end. If they haven't already. They've already removed the app on Apple TV. And
that's what happens when you're not patient.
Should have followed the rules. They say it's not for you. Don't try. So, messing up for Alfred and I, like, down here in the States.
Yeah, man.
Wait your turn.
Wait your turn. In due time.
We the people.
It's we the people, not you the people.
Yeah.
So, Oh, man. Shout out to everybody. Hey, you won a gold medal in hockey. Be happy.
I heard you. I heard your show last week. You're both wrong. I could have told you that.
We don't have to talk about that. Oh, about the prediction going over?
Yeah. About U.S. winning, yeah.
Yeah, we what didn't we say, Nate? What was our score? We said 1-0 U.S.?
I don't remember. Did you guys have a score? I don't remember if you guys have a score.
I said 2-1.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay, that's what it was, because it was a score from the 2010. Yeah.
Yeah. Why you got to bring up old stuff, Marcus?
Because I wasn't
here. We didn't want to be domestic terrorists.
We're looking towards the future, like Hogan said. This is the launch of a new era, the launch of the WWE universe, brother.
Yeah, leave the hockey to this black guy.
Yeah, we were encroaching on your minute for a little bit.
I know.
Honestly, I just wanted to play the drop again one last time.
Yeah, you work hard on that drop, man. We got to get all we can get out of that drop.
We got to recycle. Well, that's going to do it for this special edition of the Kings of Sport, the Ringside Wrap, State of the WWE edition. We will be back with with our regularly scheduled program later on in the week. I don't know what we're going to talk about yet, but I'm sure we'll talk about Jason Collins maybe and Michael Sam and some of those things and the NFL combines, the NBA. There's lots of stuff to talk about. So come back same time, same channel. I was gonna say same black time, same black channel.
Which means late, which is sort of like the podcast goes sometimes. So it all works out.
Hey, CPT, hashtag CPT. But yeah, we'll be back with a new show. And, you know, like we said, go to our Facebook page and vote in the poll, and we will give the results on our show later on this week. So for Marcus Vandenberg, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. And you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.